Welcome, members of Ominous Archives, to a place rarely spoken of, the Ominous Library. Each week, Nick and Em guide you through the lore, history, and unanswered questions behind some of the world's most unsettling stories. But if you've made it this far, you've unlocked something different. Something that doesn't always want to be found. Hidden among the archives is a collection of books that appear without warning. No catalog number, no date, no record of who placed them there. Each one contains accounts labeled true, stories that surface only when a topic has been spoken aloud enough times to stir something waiting underneath. No one knows how these stories were gathered. They don't arrive by hand, they simply appear, almost as if summoned. Tonight, one such book demanded attention. As Nick and Em shared the legend of the Bow Witch, this volume made itself impossible to ignore. Warm to the touch, its pages restless, as if it could no longer remain closed. Some stories refuse containment. What you're about to hear is the first entry drawn from the Ominous Library. It's a story claimed to be true, though, as with all legends, the truth often lingers somewhere between belief and fear. So settle in and allow me, Scare Me Sam, to read you a short story about the Bow Witch. I know I will die, but not like everyone else will die. My death will be particularly unpleasant. Before it happens, as it is, I think it will happen tonight. I want to tell the truth of how it came to be. It will sound insane, but I don't have the luxury of time to convince you. This will be the story of my death, take it or leave it. This past weekend, I went on my yearly summer Friendsgiving camping trip. I hated it, to be honest, but I had serious FOMO the 1 year I opted out. Even in my 20s, I still struggle with the feeling of not being included. My friends are my family. They are literally the only family I have. Chris, of course, was the organizer. Tall, broad-shouldered, with sun-brown skin and her thick black hair always pulled into a practical braid, this girl knows everything about wilderness survival, hunting, purifying water, you get it. Needless to say, the remaining three of us were just ducklings, following her around, obeying her every warning not to touch a certain plant or eat a particular mushroom. Everyone except Danielle. Danielle was always all sharp smiles and restless energy, and her long dark curls always escaping whatever clip she tried to tame them with. And she was fond of the mushrooms that made you feel like you were dancing in a rainbow. We could always count on her to bring the weed, the snacks, the entertainment. I never felt bored around Danielle. Gabby, on the other hand, bores me to death, but she's the heart of the group. Her with her light blondish red hair. She always wore straight, loose down her back like a comfort blanket she never took off. Gabby cares so much, sometimes a little too much, about everyone's feelings. She's the one who makes us group hug when someone was upset. It could be annoying, but she's the friend I trusted most and the friend who never forgot my birthday, and I did my best not to ever forget hers. So Chris, she leads us to this new campsite she heard about during a recent trip to the small town of Adams in Tennessee. Her family bought a vacation cabin there, and she mentioned the local legend in that area casually at first. The woods, the stories. I think she sensed we were outgrowing sleeping bags and fire pits, trading them for resorts and spa weekends. And this camping trip, this yearly Friendsgiving camping trip, this was her way of keeping us tethered to something wild. But we knew the legend loosely about the Bow Witch, enough to joke about it, enough to reference the Blair Witch Project and laugh. But none of us knew what would happen. Not really. And as we drove up the narrow forest road, something tightened in my chest. The trees felt closer than they should have been. The road, very quiet. A smell of mold and decay floated in and out of my nose every time Gabby cracked the window. She noticed my unease right away. I remember Gabby asking me, "Everything okay, Val? You look pale." But before I could answer, Danielle shouted, "Oh, shit!" "What?" Chris snapped, fighting the curve. She was, of course, driving. "I forgot my meds, my sleep meds. I've been having night terrors again." Danielle looked so disappointed with herself. But of course, Gabby was immediately comforting. She reached back from the passenger seat and squeezed Danielle's knee and told her that, "I'll put my tent next to yours. Don't worry. I'll wake you. It's not like we haven't heard you scream in your sleep before." Which was true. We had been friends for over 10 years, so this was one of many camping trips we had taken. We arrived at the campsite, and it was as expected. Tall trees surrounded us, the forest floor damp, soft, and mossy, and the crashing sound of the Red River was violent and very close. We set up our tents, ate hot dogs, smoked some of Danielle's weed, and reminisced about past trips. When night fell, Chris told the tale of the Bell Witch. A spirit that spoke, a voice that mimicked the living, and a thing that hates without explaining why. The story entertained but didn't scare us. We were all paranormal junkies, often joking that we should start our own ghost hunting tours. And after our ritual goodnight whiskey toast, we all went to bed. And Danielle screamed sometime after midnight. It wasn't a loud scream, just sharp and panicked. And almost instantly, I heard Gabby's voice. "Shh, you're okay. Go back to sleep. You're only dreaming, Danny. Shh." And Danielle quieted. We all slept. Well, almost all of us. The next morning, Danielle woke from a sleepless night, apparently, and the exhaustion was written all over her face and settled deep beneath her brown eyes, and shadows were bruising her warm skin. She insisted that it hadn't been a night terror. It wasn't a dream. It wasn't something her mind had made up. It wasn't the weed or the whiskey. "She was standing outside my tent," she whispered to me. "She was praying. I don't know what she was praying about, but her wrists were twitching. And she was whispering to me, telling me she hated me in between her prayers. But I told her, we all told her, it was just a case of night terrors. Missing medication made her see what she thought was the stupid fucking Bell Witch. A legend, we thought. Danielle didn't speak much for the rest of the day. We didn't even see her smoke weed or eat. Two very odd things for her. By the second night, I think we were all eager to sleep early and ready to welcome morning and end the trip as planned. The place just felt wrong. Even Chris couldn't pinpoint it. And close to midnight, Danielle screamed again. I heard the shushing, but something was wrong about it. It was too flat, too precise, like it was being practiced. Still, Danielle quieted, and I assumed Gabby had once again come to her rescue. I tried to go back to sleep. I really did, but my bladder won. So I hobbled out of my tent, making my way toward the makeshift toilet Chris had fashioned for us pickier campers. I remember the woods were deafeningly silent, and fog pulled around the dying fire, its weak orange glow casting an unearthly haze around the air. Cold settled into my skin, and dew clung to everything. And I heard a soft jingle of chains and hectic, fast whispering, but I couldn't make out the words. And then that's when I saw it, standing directly in front of Danielle's tent. It was about 7 feet tall, hair hanging straight to the ground, and wrists twitching in a praying stance. It didn't breathe, it didn't sway, but I smelled a scent like spoiled milk and meat. And then it turned its head and looked right at me. I stepped back, tripping over a rock, and screamed as my hip hit the ground. I turned to see that this fucking thing had just vanished. No one came rushing out of their tent. No one saw it. No one heard me. So I slumped back to my tent with my full bladder, a bruised hip, hell-bent and embarrassed that my mind was just playing tricks on me. But still, for some reason, I stayed frozen in my blanket until I saw sunlight poking through my red tent. And Chris was the first to see it when she woke up and began fixing breakfast. She immediately started shrieking, which made me realize I had never heard Chris scream before. I only glanced inside Danielle's tent for a second, long enough to confirm what Chris was screaming as she yelled for Gabby and me to come and see what was inside. Even now, that single second is burned into me. Danielle's head on her pillow, her body gone. Her eyes were wide open in shock, her mouth frozen as if mid-scream. Her nose scrunched. Half of her dark curly hair just cut away. The minutes that followed blurred together. Chris screamed continuously, her former composure and confidence gone. Our fearless leader was a shadow of herself. And Gabby, she cried uncontrollably, clutching her chest as if her heart might give out. I just stood there, numb, until I thought to call the police. And when they arrived, Gabby and I were placed in the back of a patrol car, and Chris was taken by ambulance. Shock had completely rendered her nearly catatonic. And inside the car, I asked Gabby if she'd gone back to Danielle's tent a second time after her scream, just trying to piece together what could have happened. I didn't hear a scream, Gabby said. I was shocked at this. I said, I heard her. I heard you shushing her. And then Gabby looked at me, more serious than she's ever looked at me before. That wasn't me, Val. I slept the entire night. Chris's parents welcomed Gabby and me into their rental home, just 20 minutes away while the police continued their investigation. One patrol unit remained parked just down the road, a reminder that we weren't free to go home and we might even be suspects. Chris remained at the hospital with her parents. Gabby rocked herself to sleep on the couch, staring at the fireplace, exhausted from telling the police and the investigators our story over and over again, all the events that took place the night before and the morning of. I couldn't sleep. I wasn't worried about the outcome. The police would figure out that we had nothing to do with Danielle's death. But what I couldn't figure out was what the fuck was it that I'd seen? Had I imagined that figure? I didn't mention it to the cops. Was that a mistake? Had that thing killed my best friend? Was she really fucking gone? And that's when I heard chains and knocking and fast whispering all around the cabin. I looked out the kitchen window toward the tree surrounding the small house. The thing, the witch, was standing in the backyard. I woke Gabby. Look, there she is. That thing killed Danielle. Gabby never looked at me with such annoyance before. I remember her saying, "Where, Val? I don't see anything. God, will you just stop? We lost our best friend, our sister. Some psycho is still out there, and you keep going on about the Bow Witch. I love you, but I can't do this right now. I can't be there for you." Shame filled her eyes as she shook her head and stumped back onto the couch, crying softly until she just passed out again. She saw nothing. It's been 2 hours. I haven't left the window. I'm writing this while Gabby sleeps, while Chris lies in a hospital bed, and while the police search for a ghost or a demon or a psycho that doesn't exist. But the witch is still outside, and she gets closer each hour, and her praying is becoming more violent, more hectic. I can feel her hatred. And I know I am next.